Our next case this morning is Resico against Walmart Stores. Mr. Kendall.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. This is a case about a 52-year-old woman who was working at a Walmart store in Jasper, Indiana, who was harassed and treated vilely for a period of at least 6 months to a year by a supervisor at Walmart, who Walmart itself called a supervisor to the EEOC, and who was instrumental in providing information that led to her termination by Walmart, and was instrumental in telling everyone that he was going to get her and get even with her, both for her complaints about him, which she made three times in writing and six times in meetings to management officials at Walmart. The woman was terminated at the end of about a six-month period of complaints. Within days of her last rounds of complaints to a substitute manager. And when she was terminated, the information that was relied on came directly from not only the investigation by the in-house inspector, but also directly from this supervisor.
You know, the problem, though, is just to start, the written statement that Ms. Resico provides indicates that she was on the verge of abusing her position and dishonestly selling these shrimp, didn't change her mind, and it's quite clear that Walmart knew that she had changed her mind in this instance, but nonetheless, based not only on Mr. Simpson's participation in this, but on Klusner and Tony Myers and other actors, the decision is made by Myers and Horney to terminate her. So there's a difference, I think, between causation and coincidence. And even if this very unfortunate series of events and behaviors by Simpson had happened, and of course nobody could approve that kind of behavior, when it comes down to it, we have to focus on the termination, and the termination is quite insulated from that behavior.
Well, Your Honor, I don't...
He's not the person with authority to fire her, number one. He's not her supervisor in that sense. I mean, actually, there's a pretty decent argument that although he's got some day-to-day authority over, maybe he's not really even a supervisor, but forget about that for the moment. The person who makes the decision to terminate her and the evidence on which that person decides are neither one of them ultimately related to Simpson.
Your Honor, I've given some thought to that issue, and I think that although there are obviously arguments on both sides, or we wouldn't be here, or we wouldn't even be arguing about summary judgment, I think that there is evidence that there's a connection. First of all, it was on November 1st that Simpson's roommate was fired after 6 months of complaints about his conduct by Ms. Rassicott, who also worked in the same department and who participated in a lot of the statements and activity.
But I understand the temporal sequence, but the fact that you need to deal, the facts that you need to deal with are, number one, her personal written statement about the shrimp incident, I'll call it, her personal statement about that, the fact that not one person but two people observe what they think is questionable behavior, and in the end, you know, she doesn't do it, but then the counseling she had received a few weeks before, which was known, as far as we know, only to the manager, not to Simpson. From the manager's point of view, I guess horny, she is a repeat offender, if you will, and skating too close to the rules. I just, despite these timing issues, Simpson just seems too far out of the loop here to me.
Well, if I understand your question, Your Honor, to focus first on the statement, I think that the statement itself is ambiguous as to whether she's saying that she decided to do it and then relented, or that she thought about doing it and decided not to internally.
But Walmart seems to say they don't care. They're assuming, you know, she says, I made a judgment I shouldn't have. I was going to give it to her, and then I decided I would get in trouble. And so she ends up, as I understand this statement, and I take the facts favorably to her, she ends up not doing it. But the problem is, what the Walmart people said is, that's enough for us. The fact that she came that close makes us have integrity concerns.
I think you can infer from the information that they provided the EEOC that, or it's reasonable to infer, that they're not telling the truth about that. They told the U.S. EEOC in a written statement from Horney, the store manager, and in a written statement from the co-manager, Myers, that they terminated her because she actually sold the underpriced
food. That's not their position here.
And admitted that she sold the underpriced food. And
but
they
is
put
that even
in
this record? I mean, there were record issues
yes,
in this case.
Yes,
I
it is in
but
this.
But the fact is, here they're defending the judgment of the district court on the milder ground, if you will, that there were simply integrity issues.
I think the real integrity issues are Walmart, because Walmart represented to the EEOC those things, and that can be found in Exhibit 15 and Exhibit 17, which was admitted by order of the court, nunc pro tunc, which is a certified copy of the EEOC record. That then they represent to the court ambiguously whether she just admitted she did it or she admitted thinking about it and doing it, and that position changed from what they told the EEOC to the affidavit that was finally filed. And I think the second reason you can infer that is that if you look at Exhibit 15-0 or 17-0, which is the record of the EEOC submissions, you'll see 18 names of employees that Walmart submitted as comparable employees. But if you examine those 18 names, only 14 were terminated for underringing or theft of money or time. Of those 18, 10 were males, and 4 of the males were marked for rehire. 4 were women. None of the women were marked for rehire, and all of them were under the age of 40. Not only that, but
well, this is a different theory you're arguing. You're not arguing a harassment theory now. You're arguing a discrimination theory.
I'm arguing that that's evidence.
Not of harassment.
It may be. Viewing harassment as a subspecies of
yeah,
discrimination.
Yeah, you know,
of
I mean,
power.
When you say they fired the men and not the women, or vice versa, that's straightforward sex discrimination kind of claim. Doesn't have to involve anybody using bad language or otherwise harassing a person.
But what it does show is that when Walmart says that we're firing her because she thought about stealing, there's not.
And had the earlier incident.
And all of these people had earlier incidents, but all of them actually did it. Every single one actually did it. They stole time, they stole money, they shoplifted, and
well,
4 of the 6 were rehired.
Yeah, this is pretty far afield from your brief.
Well, I was trying to address a question, and that's part of the record. That is part of the record that's been submitted, and I think that that is a significant piece of information. If the concern is whether or not there's some evidence that Walmart was not acting in good faith, Simpson himself signed a statement to the EEOC which said that he denied, that said she actually underrang and sold the material. In other words, everyone from Walmart submitted through the legal department in Arkansas, submitted to the EEOC statements prepared not by the legal department but by these witnesses. The defendant makes some issue about whether or not her affidavit is supplemental or contradicts her deposition. These are written statements written by these witnesses, not prepared by attorneys, that say she took it. And the reason I'd suggest to the court, you can infer they say that to the EEOC, is because everybody else they've ever fired for underringing or theft has done it, not thought about it.
The argument in your brief on discrimination doesn't even take up a whole page. I really think you abandoned that. You're on a harassment theory, and maybe you need to stick with that because that's what you fleshed out.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think that if one looks at the analysis under CITAR of what constitutes an environment where you can infer hostility and infer direct evidence, not infer, but where there's such activity that the circumstantial evidence points directly to hostile intent and animus, that these kinds of things contribute to it. Ms. Racicot complained about this extraordinarily. She did it in writing, and then in August of 2000, she sent in a letter to the district manager, to the store manager, Horney, that said expressly that Simpson has harassed me since I complained about him. He has allowed Condra to continue to do things to me. Simpson has threatened my job and told me he's going to get me fired. And Condra is his roommate. After that letter, Horney, the store manager, talked to her three separate times in August and early September, the conclusion of which was nothing visible happened to Simpson. And she, Racicot, tells Horney, the store manager, again, nothing's changed. This goes on into a September meeting in which the same thing is discussed with women. And then Horney submits her statement to the EEOC and her affidavit in support of summary judgment and says that no one ever brought to her attention or complained to her about harassment or retaliation in all the years she worked at Walmart. This is the same person who tells the EEOC that she's firing her because she stole it and admitted she sold it, and then turns around and in reality says to the court, because her other documentation denies it, that she thought about it, and the fact that she thought about it did it. The earlier incident didn't even result that you referred to, where she contemplated holding back product for her husband, who came in regularly to shop. The earlier incident didn't even involve actually carrying it out. The earlier incident didn't result in a written reprimand. There was no paper placed in her file, and she'd worked there for a year and a half, and she had excellent ratings, and there's no other previous incident that they can point to. Yet, when you look at the people that were turned in, and I'm not offering this to prove discrimination. I'm offering this to prove lack of consistency and credibility from which one might conclude that they're not telling the truth at the end about these material issues. Of those 18 people, four of the 10 that are males, they'd all actually stolen the property. Some of them actually did shoplifting. One of them was actually a minor who gave it away to other minors, and all were marked for rehire, all four out of those 10. Of all 18, nobody said, I thought about doing something that's against company policy and decided not to do it. Even God does not care whether your motivation ultimately is because you fear the punishment of hell or whether you really are doing it just because you love God. But Walmart apparently thinks that...
I'm not an expert on that, so I...
not my understanding of Christian theology, but
I think
it doesn't depend... Nothing in this case depends on the answer to that question.
It does to Walmart, Your Honor, because Walmart says that in the case of Racicot, it doesn't matter that she didn't do it. It doesn't matter that she thought better of it. Her motive for thinking better of it and not breaking our policy was not noble enough. Finally, the paper that Simpson picks up on the floor shows that she actually had priced the shrimp correctly. The receipt that Walmart produces and also appears in J-15-0 and 17-0 to the EEOC actually shows that she sold the shrimp at the correct price. They knew she sold it at the correct price, yet the only person who in any documentation prior to this case being filed in federal court and the defendants answering statements under oath to the court who said she thought about it but didn't do it is Burns, the investigator. Horney says she did it and admitted it. Simpson says she did it and admitted it, and they say that's why we fire her, and I'd suggest the reason they said that to the EEOC and their credibility is at least a question for a jury, is because a red light is on and I'm supposed to quit. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Kendall. Ms. Zeller.
May it please the Court, my name is Susan Zell and I represent the Appalachian Walmart Stores, Inc. The judgment of the District Court should be affirmed for four reasons. First, Racicot's retaliation claim fails because she's failed to establish a prima facie case and Walmart articulated a legitimate, non-invidious reason for her termination. Second, Racicot's co-worker sexual harassment claim fails as a matter of law because she hasn't demonstrated that she was harassed because of her sex, the alleged harassment was not severe or pervasive, and there's no basis for employer liability in this case. Third, Racicot's co-worker age harassment claim also fails as a matter of law because, again, Racicot did not experience severe or pervasive harassment, and Walmart was not negligent in discovering or remedying it. In other words, again, there's no basis for employer liability. Finally, Racicot's sex discrimination claims are barred by the statute of limitations to the extent that they're raised on appeal. Turning to the first issue, the District Court properly granted summary judgment on Racicot's retaliation claim. Because Racicot has no evidence to support a retaliation claim under the direct evidence method, she must proceed under the indirect evidence standard as the District Court properly applied in this case. Under the indirect evidence standard, summary judgment is proper because Racicot didn't even attempt to offer evidence that similarly situated employees who refrained from engaging in protected activity received more favorable treatment. The record is absolutely devoid of any such evidence.
Now, what's this EEOC record that your opponent was referring to?
Your Honor, in filing for summary judgment, Walmart moved for summary judgment on the retaliation claim. Plaintiff responded and made several arguments that Walmart had made inconsistent statements to the EEOC, which counsel referred to in his statement.
Right.
That evidence was not before the court, and Walmart properly objected, stating that the statements that were being referenced by the plaintiff were never admitted into evidence. On reply, the plaintiff then submitted with his reply a certified copy of the FOIA response from the EEOC, which contained some unsworn statements from store manager Kathy Horney, co-manager Tony Myers, and supervisor Dan Simpson. These statements, counsel alleges, are inconsistent with the position that Walmart has taken in this case currently. And a close review of those statements does not support that. First, I don't think the statements are properly before the court because I don't think they were properly admitted in the manner in which they should have been under Rule 56 for summary judgment procedures. But even assuming that they were before the court and the court had this as sworn testimony, what Walmart stated to the EEOC in its position statement is that Racicot had admitted to marking down shrimp. That's what they said in their position statement, that that was the reason that she was terminated. They provided a statement from Horney, unsworn, that stated that Racicot had admitted to selling shrimp at the wrong price. Racicot worked at a deli counter in the seafood counter. Racicot's job was to weigh shrimp or whatever seafood she was selling, tag it, and then the person would go to the front where they would actually purchase it. Walmart determined, and Racicot admitted, that in fact she did think about doing this, and in fact evidence supported that she had printed out some tags that seemed to appear that she was going to sell the shrimp for the wrong price. And that's what Horney was making the statement, that yes, she had admitted to selling shrimp at the improper price. She had admitted that she had considered doing that with her friend and had begun her role in that process.
Well, does it make any difference? Suppose Walmart really did say, I mean, you're kind of blurring over admitted to selling it or admitted to thinking about selling it.
Does it matter?
Does it matter?
No. I don't believe it does, Your Honor, because the focus in this case is what Walmart honestly believed. What Walmart is honestly...
Well, but your opponent is saying Walmart is being inconsistent in portraying what it honestly believed, either that A, she actually did it, or B, she thought about doing it.
No, I don't think... First of all, I don't think Walmart has been inconsistent. I think they've consistently stated that, look, there was suspicious activity that was going on. It was reported by independent coworkers. We conducted an investigation. She admitted, at the minimum, she admitted in her investigation that she thought about doing
right.
it and then changed her mind. That's enough. Walmart didn't care whether she actually did it or whether she didn't, whether she actually saw the coworkers coming over and reporting this behavior and so then she changed her mind or she didn't. At the end of the day, Walmart terminated her for integrity issues, and that's what the exit interview states.
That would, of course, be an interesting sex discrimination issue had it been fleshed out. I mean, suppose Walmart fires women who think about selling at the wrong price and fires men only if they actually sell at the wrong price.
Well,
you'd have a problem, would you not?
Well, Your Honor, perhaps we would. However,
yeah, you would have a problem if
you
the facts showed that.
I guess my more accurately would be perhaps we would in this case if that were what the evidence supported. First, that argument was never made to the district court, and it's been waived on appeal. Second, the record doesn't support.
Certainly not developed. Let's put it that way.
And second, Your Honor, the record doesn't support such an assertion. Rassicott was terminated for thinking about selling shrimp at an improper price or attempting to sell it at an improper price. The similarly situated associates would be other associates who had thought about it and didn't do it. She's offered no evidence of these associates. She's also offered no record evidence of associates who, in fact, sold markdown merchandise and were not terminated under circumstances similar to Rassicott. For example, counsel stated in his argument to the court that there was evidence that so many males had not been terminated for actually selling merchandise, and some of them were juveniles, and they didn't have previous records. All of this is based on a FOIA response. There was no testimony ever taken, or none of this was ever fleshed out in the record. A Freedom of Information Act response received from the EEOC.
I wasn't aware that Walmart was a federal agency covered by the Freedom of Information Act.
A Freedom of Information Act response that the EEOC produced to plaintiff in response to a request. And that's what they're basing it on, Your Honor, is some records that were produced to the EEOC. No testimony has ever been taken in this case from any managers. There's no details about the circumstances of these other terminations that are being referenced by counsel. That evidence isn't properly in the record. However, I would go back to the fact that there's no sex discrimination claim properly brought before this court. The only sex discrimination that was alleged at the lower court was the sex discrimination that Rassicott alleged occurred in the denial of three scheduling requests prior to April of 2000.
But those are the ones that were time barred, and she never said that the termination itself was impermissibly discriminatory on the basis of sex, I take it.
Your Honor, that's absolutely correct. She was questioned first in her deposition regarding what evidence she believed supported her allegation that she was discriminated against on the basis of her sex, and asked for every basis upon which she believed that she had been discriminated against on the basis of her sex, and she failed to identify her termination. She identified her termination as being retaliatory and nothing more. So, first, she's precluded from making that by her own deposition testimony, and second, she did not make such an argument to the district court either. The only independent sex discrimination claim that was made at the district court, and again at this level, was the three time-barred scheduling change acts. And I would submit that even if they weren't time-barred, they would fail on their merits because there's no adverse employment action. And again, one thing important to consider as well on the retaliation claim, there's no evidence of similarly situated people who were treated more favorably. So again, we never even get to the issue of whether there was a non-invidious reason and whether it was pretextual. The court could very well stop it at that point in its decision and affirm on that basis alone. The district court also properly granted summary judgment on Rassicott's coworker sexual harassment claim.
Does it make any difference to your argument whether this man He's somewhere between being a real supervisor and being a co-worker. He has some day-to-day authority over her, taking the facts in the light most favorable to her. He plainly does not have a lot of indicia of being a supervisor. He can't hire, he can't fire, he can't set her salary, he can't do all sorts of things. Apparently, he has set her schedule on a couple of times, although you say that was a mistake, but perhaps that's a fact we ought to take in her favor. So what difference does it make if he was her supervisor?
At the end of the day, Walmart would prevail either under a supervisor theory or a coworker harassment theory for multiple reasons. The first being because Racicot cannot establish that she was harassed because of her sex. The harassment that Racicot has alleged...
Well, the thing that would make supervisory status important is whether there was a concrete employment action, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, but the concrete...
That's not being alleged.
No, and I apologize for interrupting you, Your Honor. The concrete employment action, however, would be her termination, and I think, as Your Honor accurately...
He had no role in that.
Exactly, Your Honor. Your Honor. So I don't think it would have any impact on that. The affirmative defense would be available to Walmart if he were a supervisor, and I believe that Walmart would prevail under that affirmative defense.
She claims she filed all sorts of complaints about him, though, so she... There may have been a process, but she availed herself of that process. And indeed, the process seems to have worked with respect to the roommate.
Well, it was right out the door.
Interestingly, actually, Racicot did not avail herself of that process completely with regards to the coworker, Mike Condra. Mike Condra was eventually, and I think the district court did a very nice job of pointing this out, Mike Condra was terminated in response to a complaint that they received from a third party that he had called Ms. Racicot, excuse my language.
Customer, I thought.
Yes. Yeah. A bitch outside of her presence, and Racicot was not even aware of that. That was the first information that Horney had, that Condra had used such language to refer to Racicot. And you're exactly correct. He was out the door as soon as that information became available to them. So I don't know that Racicot ever properly availed herself of the complaint procedures. Yes, the record does contain evidence that Racicot filed some written complaints regarding Condra and regarding Simpson. However, if you review the record carefully, you can see that those complaints were of a very generalized nature. They alleged use of profanity in the workplace and basically poor work performance, that these individuals were lazy, didn't do their job, and used profanity. At the same time that Racicot was making these complaints, many other male coworkers were making the same complaints to Racicot and to management, and management was investigating those complaints. But at the time that this investigation was starting, Walmart was receiving complaints from men and women, both over and under the age of 40, that this behavior was going on. There was nothing in Racicot's generalized complaints to lead them to believe that there was age harassment or sex harassment going on at that time. Therefore, I don't know that she did adequately take advantage of the complaint procedures. In addition, Walmart has established, and there is record evidence, that they do have established complaint procedures. They have a published policy. Employees are all required to complete what they call computer-based learning programs, which are computer training modules on their policies on how to report and what sexual harassment is. The record's complete with that as well. It's also complete that when they did receive gender-based evidence or what could potentially be argued is gender-based evidence of some profanity that Condra's used, they immediately terminated him. And in response to Racicot's even generalized complaints that they were receiving from both her and from men, both under and over the age of 40, they did investigate those and counsel him regarding that behavior and tried to work with them on that as well. So I think they would prevail under a supervisor standard, but I apologize because I think I did get the cart before the horse. I don't think we ever get to a supervisor standard with Mr. Simpson. With Mr. Condra, the record is absolutely clear that he was a coworker. Racicot concedes that in her deposition. So it's probably not worth any further discussion on that issue. With Simpson, I believe that the record is also very clear that he does not have the requisite authority to be a supervisor. As Your Honor properly noted, the record is clear that he didn't have the power to hire, fire, promote, demote, discipline.
But supervisors come, as you know, I mean, there can be chains, you know, with a little bit of authority and more and more and more. And I'm concerned, you know, not only for this case but for future cases about where that line gets crossed between co-employee and supervisor. And I think you've jumped a little quickly to the assumption that he's on the co-employee side of that line, which is why I wanted you to explore a little bit what it would mean if he were over the line. Maybe nothing, you know, maybe something, you know, we can see. But
it looks to me like in an industrial setting he would be called a foreman.
Your Honor, I would interpret him more as like a team leader. When we've looked
straw
at
boss.
Pardon?
Straw yeah. boss.
But then the question would become, if it mattered, if there were some concrete employment action, how foremen are treated, or straw bosses, or team leaders, or things like that. They have some authority to supervise, but no authority to hire and fire. They wouldn't be supervisors under the National Labor Relations Act, for example.
Well, in looking at this case, the cases that I came back to and relied upon in taking the position that Mr. Simpson was, in fact, a coworker as opposed to a supervisor, were this court's holdings in the Hall versus Bodine case. I found that to be very helpful. In Hall, again, the supervisor, similar to Mr. Simpson, did not have the authority to, as we've stated, and I apologize if I've belabored the point, no hiring, firing, disciplining, transferring, demoting, effect on compensation, things of that nature. However, the plaintiff had introduced evidence in Hall that the alleged harasser did exercise authority and had the ability to direct her work operations, which I think is what we're kind of talking about here a little bit, and also that he provided input into performance evaluations, which we don't have in this case, and that he was charged with training her and less experienced employees. So in Hall, we had some training that was involved with this coworker, some input into performance evaluations.
No, look, those are all factual differences, but they don't get at the question, what should the legal standard be?
The legal standard, I believe, should be the one that was articulated in Hall and Rhodes, which is you have to, at a minimum, have some authority to hire, fire, promote, demote, directly or indirectly discipline, or otherwise affect an employee's work conditions. And
okay.
I think in the Rhodes
case...
Thank
you, Ms. Zeller.
Oh, I apologize, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
The case is taken under advisement.